This hour of the Jason Rancho brought to you by MMComfortSystems.com. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
There's growing concern in Washington State as it relates to the COVID-19 infection rate. We were told that once we were to hit the 70% vaccination rate across the state, the numbers are, of course, supposed to go down. And yet, we find ourselves in a situation, the belief is that it has to do with the Delta variant, that the numbers are actually going in the opposite direction. Now, what's curious here is that we are being told by Governor Jay Inslee that it's the Trump supporters that are responsible. The Trump supporters who are not getting their vaccines. And yet, when looking at the data, it seems pretty clear that it's not the Trump supporters, it's something else. Now, are these people all unvaccinated? Because when I'm looking at the numbers, I'm looking at every single county seeing an increase in COVID cases, and that includes King County. Am I to believe that it's only Trump supporters that are getting COVID? Is that what we're to believe? We're being told over and over and over again, wear your mask. In fact, here's Dr. Ali Mokhtar.
We need to vaccinate as much as we can. Our only way to control this virus is through vaccines and wearing a mask until we reach that herd immunity. That has been our message. It hasn't changed.
Yeah, but the numbers beyond the 70% has changed, right? I mean, because now we're not saying 70% gets us to immunity, herd immunity. Now we're saying it's some other number. It's some larger number. But what that number is, we don't know because no one seems to be telling us. Now, is it 80%? Is it 90%? Or is it really 100%? Because the way that folks are talking, particularly on the left, is that we have to get every single American vaccinated. And we know that not every single American needs to be vaccinated. For example, if you had COVID a month ago, it's almost certain that you have the antibodies in your system still, which delivers you some form of protection. We know that if you are a younger person, you don't necessarily need to rush to get a COVID vaccine, depending on your age and depending on your health. I don't understand the narrative here. I don't understand why they can't stop making these outrageous claims, making it politicized. And that's why I don't necessarily believe what it is they're telling us. Not that I don't believe the data, but I don't believe the context in which they're delivering us this data. Because if the goal here was to get everybody vaccinated, would the governor go ahead and make this about Trump supporters? Would he attack Trump supporters? Would he say it's the Trump supporters on the east side of the state responsible when you've got the numbers in King County going up? So what exactly is this about? When you make things inherently political, people tend to distrust the message. Now, that said, certainly I support vaccines. I think people should get vaccinations in consultation with their doctor if they want. I made that choice. I hope others will as well because we know vaccines work. And the more we talk to people, the more we hear a willingness to get the vaccine from the resistant if they trust the people who are talking to them. And right now, the way that this whole issue is being discussed, not even just in Washington State, but across the country, is just suspicious. So, for example, you've got Joy Reid, or as Tucker calls her, the crazy race lady. She was on with Stephen Colbert. And she is taking on this talking point of how Fox News is putting up misinformation on the vaccine. And the misinformation is causing these infections. The infections then turn to deaths. And there's lots of blood on their hands. That's what they believe, and that's what they're telling us. But listen to this comment that she made last night with Stephen Colbert.
Number one, it doesn't make sense to me why the folks at that particular network, which I think we all know who we mean, would want to kill their own viewers. Their viewers are older. Their viewers are more susceptible to COVID.
That is, actually, I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
And I don't understand what the point is of killing them, because everyone on air at Fox has been vaccinated. I would put any money on it. They were vaccinated first. I'm sure they shoved little old ladies out of the way to get their vaccines first. Vaccinated.
Yeah, I'm sure Joy Reid didn't do anything to get ahead of people. Okay, so does that logically make sense what she just said? Thinking about it logically, and I know, you know, that kind of analysis of a Joy Reid comment is probably going to make a lot of our brains hurt because you can't really make sense of stupid people like her. But she's not the only one saying it, basically saying that they're trying to kill their their viewers. And there was a tweet that came out by Walter Schaub. Walter Schaub is the former director of the Office of Government Ethics, U.S. Government Office of Government Ethics. And he tweeted out that Fox News is killing people to get ratings. Does that make sense to you? How do you get ratings when people are dead? When your supporters are dead? When your viewers are dead? How exactly do you generate ratings in that situation? Again, this is one of those cases where the messaging seems not just political, but tailored specifically to going after the competition. Joy Reid is financially compromised when it comes to this kind of bias. She would make money if people ditched Fox and went to her. If people stopped watching Fox altogether, and then in the context, her ratings seem better than they actually are. So she's financially motivated to go after Fox News, so is CNN. What this seems to be about is just demonizing Fox News to go after their market share, or demonizing Donald Trump, who seems to be still a serious threat directed at the Democratic Party. It is so transparent here. And it's funny because last night on Hannity, he had delivered a pretty good message, I thought, by any standards from the left on taking COVID seriously.
Just like we've been saying, please take COVID seriously. I can't say it enough. Enough people have died. We don't need any more deaths. Research like crazy. Talk to your doctor, your doctors, medical professionals you trust based on your unique medical history, your current medical condition, and you and your doctor make a very important decision for your own safety. Take it seriously.
Now, what was wrong with that message? Well, he also on the show talked about how people are impacted by the vaccine. In fact, in that same segment, he talked about a student who was against being mandated to get the vaccine because a previous vaccine she had a bad reaction to that left her temporarily paralyzed. And somehow it's not appropriate to have any of those conversations. The smear here is so clear because I think overall, I don't think I've heard anything coming from Fox News that would be anti-vax. None of their people have been anti-vax. They've been pro-vaccine. The difference here is that they're offering analysis on why government mandates are wrong, and that hardly puts the public at risk. It's a principled position that everyone should hold regardless of an ideological viewpoint. That the part of the party that says, my body, my choice, that all of a sudden they are on the opposite side of that talking point that they use to death, that's bizarre. And then pointing to actual side effects, which can be deadly for some, that shouldn't lead to vaccine hesitancy. It should lead to people being better able to make informed decisions and identify some of the rare, but yes, serious side effects, so they know when they can have, when they can seek medical assistance. When you ignore side effects like chest pain in healthy teenage males, because you might think it's expected, it's normal, well, ignoring that can have deadly consequences. But that's what they're doing over at Fox News. They're focused on the news side of things. MSNBC and CNN, because they think it makes them holier than thou and more moral and heroic, they're taking a position, oh, we want to save lives. So they're taking a PSA posture. They're doing public service announcements. Fox News is actually doing the news side. And so when I look at the context of the surge, whether it's here in Washington or across the country, in the back of my mind, I keep thinking, I can't help but think, about the very, very clear implications by listening to the folks who are turning this into a political attack. All while remember telling us the COVID and the response and masks shouldn't be politicized. Yeah, look in a mirror, guys. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. We're here in Tampa at Turning Point USA, the Student Action Summit. Don't forget, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JasonRants or on Instagram. Just search the screen name, Jason Rants. I'll be taking you behind the scenes today. I have been for the last several days of the Turning Point USA Conference, Student Action Summit here in Tampa. Follow me at Jason Rants on both Instagram and Twitter to go behind the scenes and see what it's like setting up this thing. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Woke madness.
As you'll recall, everything is racist now. everything is racist. And so now all of these progressive organizations or organizations pretending to be progressive, doesn't really matter because the same end result is happening. They're going through what they offer and how they offer things and what they talk about and how they talk about through this radical social justice lens. And they talk like professional activists. They talk like professional activists. And what we have going here now at the Seattle Art Museum is this attempt to quote-unquote overhaul their galleries because they want to make them more inclusive. They need to make them more inclusive. Now, how they need to make them more inclusive, all that means is they are now choosing art on the basis of the racial identity of the artists. Caro 7 has a story out right now, and it focuses on Seattle Art Museum's Inye Wakomo, who is a visual artist. She grew up in Seattle. And he said that the galleries on the third floor of the American art exhibit at SAM is missing something. And apparently it's missing people who look like him. He said, I include myself in audiences that have not been responsive to the way the works have been presented. And so now he is one of the three artists helping the Seattle Art Museum's curator to quote unquote rethink how they present the art, how they present the art. Interesting. Teresa Papanikolas is the curator. She said, Seattle's a very diverse place, but this space, I have to say, is a very white space. It's dominated by a European narrative. One of those questions we're asking is, how do we break that down? How do we decolonize the museum? That's a good question, actually. How do you decolonize the museum? Because decolonize or decolonize isn't actually a word that makes sense in this context. It is a progressive buzzword. What are you decolonizing? It's not a country. It's an art exhibit. So what does that actually mean? Seriously, what does that mean? Now, there are folks on the left who think that, you know, we have to deconstruct thoughts and values and individual preferences to get away from a colonial way of thinking. We have to get away from the colonial way of thinking. How do you do that in the art term? This makes no sense. It is a fruitless effort to pretend that you're doing something meaningful when all you're doing is virtue signaling. When you use certain buzzwords, you are basically telling the world that you are woke. You're one of them. You're someone who understands the desire and importance of inclusivity while not actually doing anything to be more inclusive. And so all they're doing here is just adding art that they otherwise would have added, but now they want social currency points for it. So for example, Caro says they just acquired a painting of the Columbia River by an African-American artist by the name of Grafton Tyler Brown. Okay, so that's how you decolonize? You have more artists of color. Why weren't you doing that before? Were you all racist? Or were you picking art that you thought matched what the community wanted to see? I suppose it's possible that the curator and everybody else over at SAM are a whole bunch of racists. I don't believe that, but I suppose it's possible. They go, the curating team will dig through the museum's existing collection from the late 18th century to World War II. What's hiding down in storage that we want to bring to light? What are the themes that we can tease out of the collections? So in other words, it's art that you already have and presumably already presented, but you didn't present it in a woke enough way, so now you're going to represent the art. But again, you want credit for it. Oh, okay. Kudos, Seattle Art Museum. You just got woke. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Amazonia?
Amazon is phasing out their COVID-19 tests at their warehouses. It's supposed to be gone by the end of the month. And they're doing this for a number of reasons, according to the spokesperson. this, of course, makes sense, the reasons that they're giving. They're saying, look, the brunt of the pandemic is kind of done. We had the worst of the worst. We have a high vaccination rate. We understand that people are responsible adults, and there's not really reason for them to continue these testings. We've already done, they said, 50,000 tests across 650 facilities, and they did that every single day. And so at this point, they're looking at the, quote, progress we have made and improvements in public health conditions we are observing across the country as a reason why they are dropping this rule that they've had for their employees. Now, this makes total sense. All of this makes total sense. But I want you to be very careful about something that's going to start popping up a lot more. It's already popping up more. You're hearing the conversations about the asymptomatic spread. That people who are vaccinated, people who are dealing with the breakthrough cases and possibly spreading COVID to others, they didn't even know it. And it's dangerous. It could kill grandma who's also vaccinated, but she could also be a breakthrough case. And so they're talking about the asymptomatic symptoms or asymptomatic experiences because they want you to start testing yourself. And right now, what is happening? We're seeing more and more and more of the over-the-counter COVID tests. They're getting the FDA emergency clearance, even though they're not all yet approved officially by the FDA. They're doing it under the emergency authorization. And it's all getting in your face. Test, test, test. All the time. Well, those tests are very expensive. The Binax one costs, I believe, $20, and you have to do two tests over the course of a few days. There's another one. I can't remember the name of the company, but it's $40, and it's one test. It's a nasal swab. It takes about 15 minutes to complete, and then you find out whether or not you have any current symptoms. Lots of money is to be made here. And you're going to see a lot of investors putting it into these tests. While at the same time, you're going to hear both from the media, but also from certain politicians, the importance of constantly testing, testing, testing. And every single time you test, that's a lot of money that ends up going into the pockets of these individual companies. The pharmaceutical industry, I should say, is going to be making a killing off of this. And it's not to say that you shouldn't be getting tested. There are certainly circumstances in which it's warranted. And obviously, if you are symptomatic, you go ahead and make sure that you get that under control and you get it tested and you get it treated. But for the vast majority of people, you don't have to test yourself every single day or even every single week or every single month. You look at your own circumstances, your own family, the people around you, who's vaccinated, who's not, and then you make that decision. But people are going to be scaring you into getting tested. But just understand that at the end of the day, there is a lot of profit attached to that. A lot of profit attached to that. The same way there's a lot of profit attached to the booster shots. We say that because there's no indication that you would need a booster shot at this point. And yet some pharmaceutical companies are saying, oh, we're going to do the, you might need it. Some public health officials say, oh, you know, you might need it. We don't know what your antibody is going to look like, your antibody system is going to look like in a year from now. Even though we just had a study that came out, what, at this point, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, suggesting that it could potentially last your entire lifetime. Be careful of how people are taking advantage of you. Now, on the other side, the flip side, also be wary of the people who downplay an obvious threat. Make sure you're paying attention to that as well, because that also is out there. Certainly it exists when it comes to some talk concerning the vaccine. Just be better consumers. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. Send me a text. So I'm here at Turning Point USA for the Student Action Summit. Crowds come and go because of the different speakers, different people walking by. It's been a great event so far. Congresswoman Kat Kamick joining us here at Turning Point USA. Hello.
Hello.
It's been a while.
I feel like it's been a while.
The last time you were on was a few weeks ago, actually, but the last time we saw each other was at CPAC.
You don't call. You don't write.
I know. You know, I don't want to get too needy. because I've already made the offer that we'd like to send Pramila Jayapal out here, and I'll take you for just a month in the Seattle area, just so we have some semblance of sanity.
Oh, well,
but
we can make...
No.
Well, you know, I am a little bit partial to Florida. You know, I don't know if my constituents would appreciate would appreciate that. But you know what? That's okay. Even though folks out in your area can't vote for me, I vote for them every single day.
There you go. Although people here definitely don't want to give you up because you just had an insane amount of fundraising. Record hitting for you, right?
A record for my district ever in history.
Why do you think that is?
Because I think people are sick and tired of career politicians. They want to see someone who has a backbone, who says, you know, political correctness be damned. Mm-hmm. We want someone who's going to tell it like it is, who has no fear to go toe-to-toe with Nancy Pelosi and the squad. And that's what we've been doing. But it's not just talking about things. It's actually delivering. And so we've made a point to be the hardest workers in the room, to make sure that we're advancing conservative legislation, that we're getting wins, we're being strategic and thoughtful. It's not just about creating noise. It's about thoughtful approach to legislating. And so it's a little bit of being a broadcaster and telling the story and exposing the hypocrisy of the left. But it's also about being an architect and building that critical blueprint behind the scenes. That's the non-sexy side of politics, where you're up at 2 a.m. and you're working with colleagues to try to make sure that you have a plan in place for when we do take the House back. And that takes a lot of work. And like I said, it's not always the most glamorous thing in the world. But I think my message of I'm going to be a broker, I'm going to be the hardest worker in the room, I'm going to make sure that we're bringing people together to advance conservative principles and legislation and have a plan. When we take the House back, we're going to have a plan. We're not just going to take the House back and say, "Woof, we did it." That's when the work really begins.
Well, what's the first agenda item then? Because there's obviously lots of incredibly important issues that are facing this country. So perfect world, fingers crossed, House returns to the control of the Republicans, maybe even the Senate.
Yes.
What's the first agenda item?
Rolling back really a lot of the, or stopping, I should say, the executive orders that Biden has been going through like candy. You know, there's been a lot that he has done that is going to be detrimental, but not fatal if we catch it in time. So we need to put the brakes on a lot of those. But really focusing on the things that matter most, election integrity, making sure that people come the presidential election in 2024, they know that when they go to cast their ballot, they are getting a fair shake and it's being counted as they intended it to be, and that all of the illegitimate ballots are being tossed out because those measures are in place to ensure the integrity of our elections. Second part is secure the borders. I was 24 hours ago just standing there. I had a coyote pulling a raft of illegals across, yelling at me, talking smack. I'm talking smack right back.
What'd you
and,
say?
Well, it's in Spanish. So I'm not sure if listeners would appreciate it. There were some choice adult words in Spanish that I was using. But, I mean, these are the type of people we're dealing with. He picks up a two-month-old and says, "I'll throw the baby in the river."
Wow.
And you know, you look at the National Guard, you look at Texas DPS, you know, their public safety, their Rangers, their officers, you look at Border Patrol. They've been told to stand down, step back, and allow this to happen. And so for me, securing the border is the most important thing that we can do, because while we all want to protect our hometowns, and that's why I've been an adamant supporter of law enforcement and our first responders and fighting back on the defund police movement to the nail, my sheriffs, they can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot defend your hometown if you cannot defend the homeland, and that starts with border security. And so for me, I'm going to be focused heavily on stopping the narcotics that are pouring into our communities, making sure that people that are coming across, they have been vetted, that they have gone through the accurate, legal, lawful process. We cannot have this open border situation, because I'm telling you, there will be a dirty bomb that gets smuggled across. There will be weapons of mass destruction that make it across. We have violent offenders, sex offenders, gang members that are coming across. There's over 200,000 gotaways that we know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something, like I said, every town in America is a border town. And that is what we're going to be focused on right out the gate. Because I don't think that our country can survive this invasion of people that are coming from all over the world. 140 countries have been documented coming across our southwest border, and that is something that we cannot defend against if we don't get a wrap on
it. One of the things I think is so important when you say that every state is a border state, it's or border town, you know, when we're talking about the drugs that are coming into this country, we had last year a historic high, the highest we've ever had of overdose deaths, over 93,000. And that's just the preliminary numbers from last year.
Yes.
And I just wrote a piece for Fox News on this where the media's focused on trying to blame COVID for it, or at least framing it around COVID. And certainly COVID exacerbated some of these issues, but you have left-wing policies that are allowing basically the legalization of drugs.
Yes.
You're not getting the drugs off the streets, and you've got an open border in which particularly fentanyl is surging into this country, and it's getting everywhere.
And let us not forget that the defund police movement is taking those men and women off the streets. And listen, I feel pretty confident in that I can speak to this in a very personal way, being the wife of a first responder. My husband just last month responded to the same guy 3 times in 1 week who was overdosing on a cocktail of heroin and fentanyl. This is not unusual. And for every officer that we have in law enforcement that steps back and says, I'm retiring, I'm going to do something else because no one wants us here. Think about the firefighters that have to wait for law enforcement to clear a scene. How long is it going to be before those wait times of responding to scenes that aren't getting cleared start putting firefighters where they're in between bad guys trying to do ill harm to innocent victims? This is something that is weakening the structure of our communities. And when you talk about the open borders, there's a direct tie to the drugs that are pouring across, to what is happening in our hometowns. And like you said, 93,000 deaths from overdoses last year. That is an epidemic.
Yeah.
And it's all coming from the southwest border. I had 6 sheriffs with me on this border trip from my area. One of them even brought evidence, the physical evidence of the brick of fentanyl. He wasn't traveling with fentanyl, let me be clear, but the photos of this fentanyl that they had just confiscated. They showed it to the Border Patrol. They showed it to Homeland Security Investigations, and they said, oh, we recognize that stamp. That's from the cartel right across the river. Don't be naive about this. I'm telling you, everyone listening here, your town is a border town. We are all directly impacted by the Biden administration's policies of an open border and the stand down initiatives and directives that they are giving to our law enforcement that are there.
Is there any last one for you? Is there any sense that the Democrats understand what's going on and then just maybe politically they're uncomfortable getting in? Like, do they see this, your Democratic colleagues?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that's frustrating is I have had conversations with my Democrat colleagues and they say, oh my gosh, it's so bad. Yeah. We've never seen it this bad. This is heartbreaking. They see the kids that are being trafficked and abused. They see how much of a humanitarian, public health and national security crisis this is. But I have also heard them say, if I speak out, I'll lose my committee assignments or I'll be in trouble with this caucus. And to me, that's unconscionable. If you are so concerned with your political career, more so than the life of innocent kids that are being brutally gang raped, trafficked, abused, recycled, if you are willing to put your political career above the lives of innocent kids that are being used as pawns or the national security of our country, you don't deserve to be wearing a congressional pin. Yeah. And I think that they're really struggling because this whole situation flies in the face of the narrative that they had crafted under Trump. They wanted to paint President Trump as this bad guy who had allowed this to happen, when in fact, every Border Patrol agent that I have spoken to, and that's hundreds, they all say that the Trump policies worked and we need to stand by them. So the Biden administration needs to put the country first rather than their ego and close the damn border.
I'm with you. Offer still stands. It doesn't have to be just Seattle. If you don't want to trade with Pramila Jayapal, we'll hand you Adam Smith. You want Marilyn Strickland? I mean, we'll give you just one. You can choose wherever you want in Western Washington. We'll take. You can't steal a Republican, though. That's the only rule.
Well, like I said, even though you can't vote for me, I vote for conservatives and for Americans who love this country every single day in Washington.
Love it.
And I will continue to do that.
There
so thank you so much.
Congresswoman, thank you so much for stopping by. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show here at Media Row for Turning Point USA's Student Action Summit. Yesterday, I had the opportunity to do a breakout session with my friend Michael Knowles, and we were talking to youngsters about their interest in broadcasting, radio versus podcasting. Obviously, radio is the better one. And I decided, spur of the moment, to do a bit of a contest where I would allow 2 people from the audience to come down to Media Row and do a monologue on a topic of their choosing. I had everyone pitch me, and one of the winners comes to us from North Carolina. His name is Jason, and I swear I did not choose you based solely on the best first name for a radio host ever.
I believe you.
So what got you interested in broadcasting?
Well, I think getting the message out there is incredibly important because there's so much, you've heard the word a million times, disinformation, people that, I hate to use the word, but brainwashed essentially by the big media that cover up certain stories. We heard it with like the Hunter Biden laptop, and they change elections and they change the way people think. And to get the other voice out there is incredibly important.
How old are you?
I am 17.
So you're 17 and you already know you want to get into broadcasting, or is this just something of kind of interested?
We'll see where it goes. I think right now, college-wise, I think I might go into like strategic or political communication, broadcasting, stuff like that. That's where I'm angled right now, but wherever that takes me.
Don't get into broadcasting. We're all bitter and very angry, and I don't want you coming after my job, if I'm being honest. So what's your topic of choice?
Well, my topic of choice is kind of centered around the idea that history is one big pattern and it repeats itself all the time. And we can learn so many valuable lessons from that history. And I think a lot of people have this concept that history began when they were born. Mm-hmm. I was born in 04. So much happened before 04, especially in the last century.
Yep.
Like people always ask me, oh, you're conservative, you're a constitutional conservative. Do you feel like you were born in the wrong era? Do you feel like you should have been like a baby boomer? I said, no, I was born in the exact right time. See, I was born, I'm living in the time, I'm growing up in the time when socialism is trying to take over this country. And I have a century of evidence to fight against it. I was born in the perfect time.
Nice. Okay, what do we call on your show?
Huh?
What's the name of your show?
The Jason Stauffer Show.
The Jason Stauffer Show, right here on KTTH Seattle. Take it away.
Okay. So I mentioned before that history is one big pattern, and we can learn a lot about it. So whenever we consider tyrannical or new policies that are being presented, we throw that word around a lot. Each side calls each other tyrannical. You say, oh, you're trying to take away gun rights, you're trying to take away voting rights. It goes back and forth. So to try and angle down which side has the truth to that, or to zero down which side has the truth to that, the way I've kind of thought about it is that a lot of tyrannical policies that are proposed or that will become tyrannical policies have what I call a nudge, a push, and a shove. So the nudge plays on your good conscience and the idea that you're a good person. So if you were to think about in the 1920s and 30s when the Nazis were trying to seize power in the Weimar Republic, Germany was in a horrible economic depression. The Treaty of Versailles was keeping them in a very depressed state. So you have people come along that take up this very noble cause of, say, we're going to rip up that treaty, and we're going to make this better. We're going to make massive economic reforms. It's very hard to say no to that when you are just using your money, your paper money, as kindling, because it's worth nothing. So if someone says, hey, I'm going to make these reforms, I'm going to rip up the Treaty of Versailles, it kind of seems like a no-brainer. And if now we were to apply that to a modern-day example, such as the BLM or the Black Lives Matter movement, they're going to say, oh, well, don't Black Lives Matter? Well, of course they do. Isn't what happened to George Floyd, isn't that a terrible thing? Of course it is. You see the nudge. They try to nudge you in the right direction. They play on you good conscience, as the answers to those questions are clearly yes. What happened to George Floyd was wrong. I feel awful about that. Black lives 100% matter. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So they play on your good conscience in that regard. It's the play on the emotion, which is the pathos argument, which is an ancient Greek style of rhetoric. That's a whole nother conversation. So that's the nudge. Then you have the push. And the push is, well, if you don't join the movement after the nudge, then we're going to start to ridicule you. Which is, if you don't buy into us, because we're offering all this good stuff, we're offering to fix the economy, we're offering all this perfect utopian stuff. If you don't buy into it, then either in the case of Nazi Germany, you must hate the German people, you must hate this country, and you must be either a Jew or a communist. And a lot of times in German Nazi propaganda, they were one and the same. So that's when the left and tyrants, they start doing the name calling, which is something modern conservatives unfortunately has become very, very acquainted with. We get called nasty names all the time. So you fast forward this to modern day BLM. Oh, you're a racist. You are holding up systemic racism, which obviously that's not true, but that's the push, because no one wants to be called a racist, especially if you're not. Now, if you are a racist, then figure yourself out, but I guess own it. But no one wants to be called a racist. So if you get called a racist, that scares a lot of people to say, no, I'm not a racist. So to prove it to you, I'm going to join this movement that I might not necessarily know their ulterior motives. So that's the push. They try to push you in the right direction. And finally, that brings us to the shove. If you don't join the movement after the push, they have the shove, which is they assume that if you don't join their movement after they call you all these nasty things, they assume that you have accepted that and you've owned it, that you are a communist in the case of Nazi Germany or 30s Germany, or that you are a racist in the case of right now, and that you should be destroyed because communism is evil and racism is evil. Now, this part's almost never vocalized like the push was, but this is when we see groups like the Brown Shirts in the 30s and Antifa right now try to beat you into submission. If we can't convince you to join the movement, we're going to force you to join the movement. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Look at that. That was good.
Thank you.
What inspired that?
A lot of reading and a lot of watching. I watch a lot of documentaries.
What documentaries are you watching? Oh, my gosh. You're a 17-year-old kid. Come on.
Yeah, I know. I have no life. There's the Hitler Circle of Evil on Netflix is a good one. They talk about the rise of the Brown Shirts and how they were different from the SS and the SA, and they had a little internal rivalry, and that was very interesting. World War II in color, masterpiece. I love that.
So knowing that tens of thousands of people just listened to that, do you want to get into radio now, or are you now terrified?
No, that was awesome.
Awesome.
That was awesome.
The Jason Stauffer Show?
Stauffer Show.
The Jason Stauffer Show
on
right
YouTube.
Here. Well, also on KTTH, but how can they find you on YouTube?
They look up The Jason Stauffer Show, Stauffer, on YouTube, and there I am.
Here you go. We're here at Radio Row. That is Jason Stauffer, one of the contestants who actually ended up winning my impromptu contest to perform a monologue on very short notice here at Radio Row in Tampa. Jason, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show on KTTH. Back with more after this.